Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for a spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I am glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope that something in the next hour sparks a change in you and helps you move forward. Now, if you've ever asked yourself, why do I have so much trouble connecting with love? Is there something wrong with me? How can I change my beliefs, my attitudes around love? If you've ever asked yourself those questions, you're going to want to hear what Kimberly Hart has to say on today's show. She's a nationally recognized authority on change and an inspirational author. She's here to talk about how love really works, how we can create positive, transformative change in our lives, and how we can eliminate our resistance to love. Through the personal journey that she shares in her new book, she's got wisdom to help you learn to create the love that you've always wanted. Are you ready to meet her? Kimberly Hart is the author of Get Love, How to Transform Your Love Life. As a couples counselor and relationship expert for more than 30 years, Kimberly's transformed relationships from a dying love to a metamorphosis experience. Her retreats for single women focus on the truth of their desires instead of the wants of family and society. Kimberly served as an advisor for executives at Fortune 500 companies such as Hewlett-Packard and leaders at learning institutes such as the California Institute of Technology. As a post-trauma expert, Kimberly founded a revolutionary method of responding to psychological needs after a major disaster. You can find out more about Kimberly and her work at getlove.com. Kimberly, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you're here. One of the first things that struck me as I began to dive into Get Love was the level of vulnerability that you displayed to bring this book out. This is very personal, a very personal journey that you're sharing with the readers. And I'm wondering, did it feel like a risk to do that?
Vulnerability can be very risky. People can take what you share from the bottom of your heart and decide that it is not worthy. And of course, that would be a hurtful thing if I depended upon someone else to make me worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a very real way, it was a challenge from myself, not from someone else. Having been successful in my life and having hidden behind expert and knowing more than the other people in the room about a particular topic and being arrogant and superior about that, what I've learned over the years is that disconnects me from the very people I wanted to connect with. And so when I wrote the book, I made a conscious decision that I would drop away any shields between me and the person I shared the book with, because I wrote it as if you were my best friend, as if we were sitting down across the table together, sharing a cup of hot chocolate, and just really talking about what was true for me in my life. If I want my clients to share and to open up their hearts so that together we can change their lives, how in this setting can't I do the same thing?
That's so powerful, and you bring up something that I think is deeply true of all relationships, whether that's the relationship between a mentor and her client, or between an author and her reader, or between longtime lovers or people who've just met. It's so important to show up as you really are, and yet We spend years and years of practicing having not great habits. We spend thousands of dollars to show up as we're not.
That's an excellent point. We take classes on how to package ourselves.
Right.
How people actually hire people to package them. And what that does, and what we know in our hearts that does, is it brings someone in who is admiring and being close to someone that's not really there. It's a mask. And so no matter how much the other person loves you, you never really feel loved. So you feel empty, and then consequently you blame the other person for not loving you the way you want to be loved.
Something I often hear from people is, why doesn't he or she just see me as I really am? And the answer is because you're wearing a gigantic mask, very well constructed, beautifully done, shiny, slick, smooth mask.
Absolutely. And that mask is what we want to drop away as we grow. Growing is about dropping away who we are not. We've always been these wonderful lights. And we've covered them up for a variety of reasons, usually in childhood, to survive. There were really good reasons back then, but those reasons no longer exist. Yet we consistently renew those masks, those shields. And so love can't get to us, and vulnerability and authenticity can't get out of us. And then we're left feeling lonely. And I believe there's a pandemic of loneliness on the planet. And one of my missions in life is to help end that, so that you can finally have the connection with other people that you want.
Have we forgotten how to have that connection? Is it, are we reaching for something that we're not even sure we know if we want it? Do you know what I mean? What I think I'm reaching for may be some kind of stylized or idealized version, but it's not what I really want.
Two questions there. The first question is, do we know how to reach out? Do we know how to have an accord, which by definition means a connection of the heart, whether it is someone you just met, someone that you are checking out in the grocery line with? In that instant, can you share yourself and then move on with your day? When a love possibility comes into your life, and the romantic kind, do you know how to share yourself? And the answer is no. The answer is technology has so moved us away from actually connecting with each other. And we've used it as an excuse because connecting takes courage. We have to take our courage in our hands and decide that we will reveal ourselves and be accepted or rejected for ourselves. And so that fear has driven us to be further and further away from people. The millennial generation, that's people born between 1980 and 2000, are the loneliest generation we've ever created because we never insisted that they learn how to connect with each other. So if you watch a bunch of them gather, for instance, in Venice, California, on a street corner on Friday night, they come out in packs, and they are out just to socialize. But they all have their iPhones out, and they're talking on their iPhones and talking to the other people out of the side of their face. They're not really connecting. There's no real eye contact. They fear it, and they don't know how. And so what has happened is we've created an entire generation of people that pretend that they are totally vulnerable and totally transparent, when the truth is that almost no one knows them, and they know that, and it hurts.
It adds to that fear of being vulnerable. If I put down my phone and look into your eyes, if I show up, even if it's in the grocery line or at the car wash, if I show up as I really am, there's that risk that I'll be ignored or won't be seen or made fun of. And there's also the risk that I might start a real conversation and then have to do something with that.
Absolutely. And what if you can't find your words? So here's what I've discovered. A smile will do almost anything. People's faces totally change when they smile at you. They can be like walking zombies. And when they smile at you, all of a sudden their spirit is back, awake and alive, and there they are. I learned that when I was traveling through Scotland. I spent a month there just moving from standing stones to standing stones. And the Scottish people are reserved people. And I found if I reached my hand out first and said hello and smiled, they were the warmest, most inviting people I have been with. It just takes my decision that I'm going to risk that. So then the question becomes, well, what am I really risking? If I go into any relationship loving myself, truly being in love with myself, then if someone else decides to pass, that they don't want a relationship with me, or even in the far extreme, acknowledge my existence, I'm not hurt by that. I might mourn the loss of the connection, but I'm not truly hurt by that because I love myself, and because I love myself, I have surrounded myself with people who love me as well.
Because when we're authentic, I think we get in touch with our natural resilience. There's a beautiful part in the book where you talk about how you allow yourself to mourn or grieve or be angry and do that in a safe space for you. But then because we are naturally resilient, when we're coming from that place of authenticity, then we can bounce back. When it's all the mask, or it was all stilted or phony or not right, inauthentic, it's really hard to be resilient.
It is hard to be resilient when you're carrying that weight. I absolutely agree. And one of the things we can do is reach into ourselves rather than out to someone else. It always begins with ourselves.
You say in the book that nothing changes until you do.
Powerful words, aren't they?
And that's terrifying. What do you mean? No, I'm they're supposed to change, right? That's what's wrong in relationships. That's what's wrong. No. So tell me why that's so powerful and so important, because it's absolutely key.
Because once you're no longer a child, no one has the ability to change you. And you don't have the ability to change anyone else. So if you want your life to change, you change yourself. You can never, ever participate in someone else's change who isn't willing. And so you have to be the first one who is willing. Even as a mentor, and at this point in my life as one that is fairly significantly skilled, I know I can't help anybody who doesn't come in willing. And what I've learned in my romantic relationships, if there's something that's not working, it's always me. Always me. I'm experiencing some lack in myself that I am pretending comes from the other person because they're not loving me the way I want them to love me. Or they are doing something that irritates the heck out of me, and I haven't yet found the words to express to them that that behavior is hurtful or irritating, then giving them the choice to change. But I changed first by sharing what was really true for myself. Nothing changes until you do is incredibly powerful, because it moves you from victim to someone who has dominion over their own lives, because you can always change yourself.
Reminds you where your true power lies, doesn't it? You, in the book, talk about four very powerful steps. And these are not easy steps. We have four keywords, but these are powerful, in-depth, transformative steps to help facilitate change. And I wonder if you can help us, give us an overview of that. Because if I can't, I talk to people a lot who are waiting for their partner to change. We'd be fine if only he would do X or Y. We'd be fine if only she would understand that she, whatever. But when we take those steps for ourselves, it changes everything. So what are those four key steps?
Let me set it up a little bit. Our subconscious mind holds all our beliefs, and our beliefs create our reality. Our attitudes in the world, what we think and what we feel, are all predicated on what our beliefs bring into us. And our beliefs are stored in our subconscious mind. We have three minds. We have our conscious mind, which is the most powerful mind, because it is the only mind with choice. But as far as horsepower, it is very minuscule in comparison to with our subconscious mind. And our unconscious mind is so brilliantly powerful that we don't even begin to understand it right now. But we do understand, finally, our subconscious mind, and it has two jobs. The first job is to store all information you've ever been exposed to. And the second one is to make sure that the beliefs that you have ordered it to live by are honored. Let me say that again. We have, in childhood, usually before seven, given our subconscious mind, in the form of beliefs, orders on how we want life to work. Love hurts. Women can't be trusted. Relationships don't work. I don't deserve. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. And from that point on, once the order has been received by our subconscious mind, it makes darn sure that our life always creates experiences that honor that belief. See, we have it backwards. We think our experiences create our beliefs, but that's not true. Our beliefs are created when we have intense focus, intense feeling, and then make a choice. Oh, that's how life works. So really, truly, our seven-year-olds are running our love lives.
Oh, dear.
Yes. It's phenomenally disturbing, isn't it? And you and I, if we would go to lunch and sit and talk about our the loves of our lives, we would not run across the floor and ask a mom if we could talk to their seven-year-old and sit down and say, hey, I've got a date tonight. How should I behave? And yet, because our subconscious mind stored those beliefs, and an important thing to recognize, our subconscious mind has no choice. It must do what we ordered. It has no judgment about those orders any more than your computer has judgment about the programming in it. It will make sure that if you walk into a room of 100 people, the one person you're going to be attracted to is the person that honors your belief about love or about friendship or about business. That's the person you will be attracted to, and that's what you will create. So no matter how you decide to repackage yourself, no matter how you decide that you are going to this time choose differently because the last time that person just really hurt you and you're never going to do that again, no matter how many times you make the decision that you're not going to do that, because the belief is the same and the choice was the same, your subconscious mind will override you every time, and the person, we've all had this experience, will change right in front of your eyes and become the person that you promised yourself you would never be with again.
Huh. And there are four steps. We tell ourselves that's fate.
Yes. Oh, yes. That the gods are doing it to us. No. We did it to ourselves. That's the good news. We can change it. It's like Dorothy's ruby red slippers. She always had the power to go home. She just didn't know she had to click them three times and wish herself home. We've always had the power, but no one taught you the skills. The four steps are about those skills. So think about this. You have the magic formula to reprogram your subconscious mind and to sit back and let your subconscious mind pull in a new life. All you have to learn is those four steps. The first step is to really notice, to recognize, what is it I want to change? What belief do I have? And in this case, we'll talk about love. And if you think you don't know, sit down across the table from your family or your best friend. They know exactly what you feel about love because they've been watching you do it your entire life. So you first discern what is it that you want to change. In the book, I talk about, for me, I had previously moved past the belief that love hurts, which I learned very clearly in childhood, to no matter how hard I try, I will never be loved the way I want to be loved. Oh, I would be loved, but not in the way I wanted to be loved. And you can watch as I step by step change that belief, so you don't feel like you're alone. Again, you and I are best friends. We're going to do this together. The second step is to figure out why you hung on to it for so long. Why did I hang on? Because I've had the skills for a long time. Why did I hang on to the belief that no matter what I did or how hard I tried, I'd never be loved the way I wanted to be loved. Well, on some very real level, I thought I was protecting myself. So acknowledge why you've hung on to that. And in the book, you and I look at 7 really key questions that you can ask yourself that will reveal to yourself why you've done that, which leads to the 3rd step, the key step in almost all change, which is to forgive yourself for all the pain you've caused yourself, to forgive yourself for that wounded person who thought they needed to protect themselves in a way that only caused themselves pain. And then the 4th step, to literally access your subconscious mind in a very specific way that you and I do together, so that the subconscious mind understands the orders and lays down a new belief. Just like in your computer, if you have it reprogrammed with ones and zeros, it will behave differently. If you know how to reprogram your subconscious mind, it will now work for you rather than against you.
Is there always, I don't know how to ask this, is there always a protective reason, a good reason that we hold beliefs, even erroneous beliefs? I think what I'm getting to is, are we always at some level making decisions we think will help us, think will serve us?
In some sometimes very disjointed way, that's true. We don't leave the house because that world's a scary place. We don't say hi to the person sitting next to us on the bus because they might be someone that might hurt us. So in a very real way, we think we're making decisions, but that's faulty thinking. My experience with people is that on a one-to-one basis, almost every single human being will step up and be there for you. Unless they happen to be totally damaged, and then we can forgive them for not being there. There was a book written by a gentleman, and I wish I could remember the name, but he had a dollar bill, and he bet his friends he could travel across the country on a dollar bill, and he did. The kindness of strangers that he wrote about in that book was phenomenal, but every community said the same thing. Listen, we're really good people here, but be careful of the people in the next community.
Huh.
Be really careful. They're not as nice as we are. And because we believe that myth, because we believe that people aren't just like us and want to connect, that what happens is that we protect ourselves. But let me give you an example. I have an acquaintance who smokes like a chimney, and he always reeks of cigarettes. And when people get near him, they literally take a step back because he always reeks. And he thinks that's because there's something wrong with him. He will not hear that he needs to stop smoking if he wants to be close to people, that he needs to clear out his entire apartment, wash or give away his wardrobe, do something with it how it's been in his hair for the last 40 years. That's his way of keeping people at arm's length. At the same time, he suffers from immense loneliness that causes him pain to the point he's not sure he wants to be here.
Mm.
So is his decision by taking a hit of caffeine, which diminishes his ability to feel, is that a protective mechanism? Yes. Is it a mechanism that's keeping him from the very thing he wants? Yes. There's no easy answer. Just the answer that works for you.
That's complicated because we develop mechanisms, patterns to help us deal with pain, especially the pain of past experiences. I really resonated when you said that it's not
Karen.
Our experience that cause our belief. It's our beliefs that cause our experience. I really resonate with that. And I think we form patterns based on the opposite. This experience teaches me that no one will ever get close to me, and so I'm going to live as if that were true. When in fact, our living as if it were true makes it true.
Makes it more and more true. It's like a rut in the road when you're riding your bike and it's raining outside, and let's say you're doing a circuit, and every time you go over that same spot, your wheels fall into that little narrow groove that you have worn, and it becomes more and more difficult to balance.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Absolutely. Oh, this is good stuff. You are listening to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Kimberly Hart. Her new book is Get Love, How to Transform Your Life, How to Transform Your Love Life. You can find out more about Kimberly and her work at getlove.com. When we come back, I want to talk to Kimberly a little bit more about the power of forgiveness. And I also want to check in with her about how meditation can help us change those beliefs in our subconscious mind. We'll be right back with Kimberly Hart after this.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio, empowerradio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Kimberly Hart. We're talking about her new book, Get Love, How to Transform Your Love Life. You can find out more about Kimberly and her work at getlove.com. And of course, I welcome your feedback, your stories, your questions, your comments about what you're hearing today. Do you believe that you hold subconscious beliefs and patterns that are perhaps stopping you from having what you want? What are some of the ways you go about changing those patterns? You can always get in touch with me through my website, which is KarenHager.com. That's also a great place to find out about upcoming classes and events. You guys know I'm on the road. You can tell by the sound that I'm not in the studio today. You guys know I'm on the road and I am teaching and working with people in San Francisco and LA. If you're in either of those places, check out the website and come see me because I would love to smile at you and see you in person. Now, Kimberly, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about the power of those beliefs that we hold, the power that our subconscious mind has, it's doing its job. It's holding those beliefs. It's filling the orders that we gave it. How do we move from that forgiving ourselves from forgiving ourselves from holding those beliefs to a place where we can really affect permanent change?
There used to be an expression that people change when the pain of not changing becomes greater than the pain of staying where you are. And that is so, it's such old school. And here's my thought. If we are going to create a bunch of lemons in our lives by having belief systems that don't work for us, at least create lemonade out of that. But it's important for us to really pay attention that the best time to change is when we are in what's called light chaos, L-I-G-H-T. For instance, a vacation is light chaos. Chaos and crisis, by definition, is your daily pattern changes. The emotional demands are very overwhelming and you can't keep up. And your schedule is so overwhelming that it's very difficult to keep up. If you have belief systems that don't work for you, you're in crisis a lot of the time. And crisis, the good thing about crisis, is that it precedes and follows all change. It precedes all change because whether it is a constricting or dark crisis or a light crisis, you are out of control, which is exactly where you want to be, because control and love cannot exist in the same space simultaneously. Think about that.
Oh.
I was a control freak. Oh, Lord. And what made me begin to really work at it with my mentors was because one of them told me, Kimberly, you get to choose now. Be controlling, because that's the way I thought I would survive in life. So be controlling or risk love. And there was no thought for me. I knew knee-jerk reaction. I wanted love. And so I had to do the work to let go of the control because they truly cannot exist side by side. So you've gone through the first three steps. You know what you want to change. You know why you clung to it for so long, and you've forgiven that wounded creature, you who created all of that pain by allowing a belief to work that you didn't know you could change. You didn't know you had ruby red slippers on your feet. And now you are on the precipice of change, because getting that far is growth, and growth is wonderful, but growth is not change. And by doing that, you have thrown yourself into crisis, whether you recognize it or not. And because crisis helps you change, you want to be in that light crisis. You want to be at the kitchen table or sitting on the couch with your best friend talking about this, feeling the feelings, feeling like the feelings were too great to hold on to, having disrupted your pattern because you're now sitting down and not doing what you normally do. You're working on yourself. And you're going to make some new choices. So now, not only does your subconscious mind perk up its ears and go, oh, this isn't the same old, where they promise themselves they're going to do something else, but they're not in crisis. They didn't deliberately throw themselves in crisis by doing the first three steps so that I can now pay attention, come out of hibernation, and go, oh, so what are we going to do next? And then you do this meditation, this closed eyes visualization that is set up in such a way that you absolutely are communicating with your subconscious mind in the way that it can interpret, because your subconscious mind does not speak English. It speaks feelings, intensities, colors, sound. It does not speak English. So the meditation is set up in such a way that it perks its ear up and goes, oh, I can do that. Okay, thank you. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I understand the new orders. Consider it done. And it does it. It has no opinion, no judgment, no discernment. You put the orders in right, it does it.
If I were to put in orders and not And didn't know till later that what I asked for is not what I wanted. Can I go back in and change it again?
Anytime. Can you change your shoes? Anytime. Your subconscious mind has no opinion at all about what its job is. It just doesn't.
Huh. I think part of the fear, one of the excuses we make is we're transforming any part of our lives, our love life, our experience around abundance and prosperity, is that I think people are afraid sometimes if we go in there and start messing around with this stuff, I could break something. I could really mess it up, right? It's bad enough now, but if I go in there, I could really foul something up.
Ah, we're back to self-trust, self-worth, self-confidence, aren't we? Loving yourself, first step to so many of those things. And it's what's going to come first, your willingness to risk a life that works for you or to stay where you are. So let's say you do. In one of the beliefs I've changed in my past was, no matter how hard I'll try, I'll fail. That was a belief I had. And so I had these stellar opportunities, and they would fall right through my fingers. And I changed the belief, and it kind of worked better. But the part of the belief that I had to go back and change because I discovered more, so that not only did it work better, it worked well in my life, is no matter how hard I try, I will never succeed. And if I do, I will be physically hurt.
Oh.
So when I would succeed, something awful would happen to me. And now, not only do I succeed, awful things don't happen to me.
Huh.
And it's because I'm better than all human beings? Oh, for goodness sake. That's hogwashing when we do stuff like that to each other. No, it's because I went in and changed my belief. You can do that for yourself. Get love, how to transform your love life, walks you through it. I don't want there to be secrets out there. I don't want you to have to come to a seminar with me or go do a webinar with me. I want you to have the information to do with what you please. It's my gift to you. Please take my gift and change your life.
It is a gift, and it comes with the understanding, at least as I experience it, and just through what I know from my time here, that truly the universe is a very mobile, supple, flexible place, and that the inflexibility we find, the hard and fast rules we find, are things that we created for ourselves and we're living into our belief of them, when the truth is that there's something much more springy and supple and flexible underneath that. That's that flow. And so when I hear you talking about meditation and change, I feel like that's tapping into that flow, into that current that runs through all things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If we feel boundaried or constriction, it's us, which once again is the good news, because if we are our own jailers, we can open the door.
Huh. That's very powerful. And first you got to realize, that's the acknowledgement part. You have to realize you're in jail. Wait a minute, what are these bars? Why do I keep running up against this closed door over and over? Right? This right. hurts. I don't want this anymore.
Yes. There was a television show once called Battlestar Galactica. And one of the cute guys on the show, his name was Boomer, I think, he was always in trouble. And he got in his spaceship and was cruising around looking at other planets. And he saw sitting on one of the planets a bunch of alcohol. And he was going to go and steal a couple crates because, after all, and when he got there, they arrested him and threw him in the jail and they knocked him out. And when he woke up, he was in this jail that was totally stuffed, filled with other people. And they helped him to his feet and they dusted him off. And Boomer being Boomer, he held his hand to the bars and he gave it a little shake. And he said, "We have to get out of here." And the door wasn't locked. And he said, "Quick, everybody, run, run." And the prisoners took their hands and pulled them back in and closed the door and said, "You don't understand. Our job is to be prisoners. Their job is to be guards." The prison cell block hadn't had locks on for centuries. They kept their children there. They raised their children there as prisoners. And the guards were guards. And that is a metaphor that we do for ourselves. We decide we are a prisoner or we are a guard. And you know what? Both are locked in to lives that don't work for us. And just like the door hasn't been locked in centuries, once you leave your parents' home and begin to raise yourself, you are free to do whatever you choose, no matter how you lie about that statement. You are absolutely free to do what you choose. And it starts not with if you have economic issues, not with having to go to classes or do any of that. It starts with making small decisions every day and asking yourself the question, is this a loving decision? If I loved myself, is this what I would do? That's how it begins. It begins with you.
If I loved myself, is this what I would do? That's right there. There's so much truth, so much power in that. And I can just imagine listeners skittering away from it. Oh, what do you mean? I love myself, but I need to see that love reflected in other people. I need to, right? And the truth is just as you laid it out. If I loved myself, what would I do?
It's
when
hard.
You work with people through these steps, Kimberly, do you find that they embrace it differently based on their gender? Do men approach this differently than women?
No, because we're all asking ourselves the question, what do I want to change? That's pretty gender free. How did I get stuck here? That's pretty gender free. Whoa, I've got this wounded person in myself that I need to take better care of, and I'm going to begin by healing them with forgiveness. No, that's pretty gender free. And I want a different life. That's pretty gender free too. Nope, it's for all of us.
I like that it's an equal opportunity. You know, there are books and programs and teachings based on this is the man's guide to finding love, this is the woman's guide to finding love, and I like that you're gender free.
I really want to help end this pandemic of loneliness. It's time. Life was never meant to be this painful. Hurdles to overcome so you can feel confident, for sure. But this painful, life was never meant to be this painful. And because it was never meant to be this painful, God got us all that is by whatever name, the divine, by whatever name, is on your side to help lift the pain if you'll just make that choice.
What does, to you, a healthy, intimate, loving relationship, what does that look like?
You know, Karen, there is no one answer to that. And I think that's the most powerful answer that there is. In our society today, we no longer have one definition to the word family. What is family? Is it one person? Is it two people? Is it two people the same gender, opposite gender? Is it three people and who are sharing a home and raising their children together? What is family? Family is whatever we want it to be. And for my definition, the caveat to that is long as it's healthy. So that's family. What is love? What is a loving relationship? And how do we know we're in one? The picture can look different from everyone. For instance, I have friends in their 20s who are looking to have a traditional relationship. They want to find someone. They want to love and respect and honor that person. They want to come into union with that person and create sometimes a family with children, sometimes a family without children, but they want to live in the same household. I have friends who are in their 60s and 70s that never intend to live with anyone ever again, but are still looking for love relationships, and they'll keep two separate homes. Is their love any less cherishable than someone who chooses to be with someone every day? The answer is no. The questions you can ask yourself to know whether you're in a loving relationship are the following. Do I feel safe enough to be myself? Do I get pleasure from being in this relationship? Am I known? And do I take the time to know? Do I feel cared about, which is different than and loved? Do I feel cared about? Are there opportunities for tenderness, closeness, vulnerability? And do I feel that I can open my heart and love? And that's a safe thing to do. If the answers to those questions are yes, then by any description, you are in a loving relationship.
What if someone listening feels that they are in a relationship where they're doing all the loving, they love more? They're carrying more of the weight, that the work of maintaining the relationship, growing the relationship, building it is all on them.
Then it's some time for some tough love to yourself. What belief do you have that you will always be the one who loves more? And no matter what relationship you end up in, you are the giver and the other person is the receiver. Even when you go in the relationship in the beginning and they are equal opportunity givers, they give you as much as you give them, or you wouldn't have gone in because you're not stupid. But then they change in front of your eyes. You have a belief that doesn't work for you. And here's the important thing to know. Nothing changes until you do. And when you do change, the world around you will change immediately to realign with your new beliefs. And so that person has a few options. They can leave. You can ask them to leave. Or they can change because now they feel that the love that they have to give you will go someplace and you will receive. See, the hardest job is not to be the lover. The hardest job is to be the receiver. And the person who receives is the one who gives the biggest gift. Because how fun is it to receive when you, to give when you see that you change the person's life by your love. And if you give them the same gift back, how loved will they feel because you received their love? Now, if you are in a relationship with a conceited narcissist, I suggest you say goodbye. Time for some tough love for yourself.
Why do we stay when we're not happy? Why do we stay? And you see this in marriages too. The divorce rate is so high. But why are so many people staying in relationships even when they know, even when everything in there is going, get out, this isn't working? Why do we do that?
Oh, people have a long list of excuses. It's for the children. It is never for the children. For children to watch a loveless or destructive relationship, they are now laying down beliefs about what love is. You are not protecting your children by pretending to be in a relationship that works, because children always know. So you can take that off your checklist. It's not the reason. The real reason is you're afraid to go out into the unknown. This is pain you know. And you haven't yet taken your courage in hand, and I underline the word yet. You haven't yet taken your courage in hand and stepped out into the unknown. What is life going to be without this pain? What is life going to be without this person? At least I knew what I was in for in this relationship. And now you want me to go out in the world and be in another relationship? No, I want you to go out in the world and be in a relationship with yourself and make decisions that are self-loving for yourself. Oh, I can't. I'm not economically free. Wait a minute. Everybody who is working, even at McDonald's, can find a room for rent that you can afford and to be free of the relationship that you say you're stuck in because you don't have any skills and you can't make a living. In every town, almost everywhere, there are low-paying jobs where you can start anew and rent a room and be free. For most of us, we don't have to start at that level. We can room with a friend. We can room with a relative for a discrete, absolutely defined period of time. And in that time, you get on your feet. 90 days will do it. And then you get out. Oh, well, Kimberly, I don't have an education. You don't understand. No, the problem is I do understand. I understand that your fear of the unknown is worse than your fear of being in a loveless situation for the rest of your life. So here's my recommendation. Get help. Don't try to do it alone. use your friends, use your family, use your spiritual family. Join a support group that is free, and there are many free ones. Get help. I didn't do this alone. I've had one mentor for 30-plus years and another mentor for 7-plus years, and I talk to my mentors, one or the other, almost every week of my life, because I never want to stop growing and changing. Even though I'm happy almost every day of my life, happiness is ground zero. And if having your own space, your own room in a rented house where you are free and can listen to your music and can begin to grow a career, to have that freedom, to have your own money, to have your own choices, if that makes you happy, then that is ground zero for you. Ground zero is happy, and from there we fly.
You're saying in such an honest way, such a frank way, no more excuses. If this is important to you, do it.
And don't do it alone. No one has to do this alone. No one has to do this alone. That's probably the biggest lie we tell ourselves. I'll be lost in the unknown together, alone. No, you won't. You'll be lost in the unknown with someone else. I don't know about you, but I have a friend, and we go on explores, and we know we're going to get lost, and we don't care. We're exploring, in this case, some new adventure, some place we haven't been. I invite you to begin to explore life and know without a shadow of a doubt you will get lost. Have fun being lost. But don't do it alone.
I'm a big believer in that spirit of adventure, that willingness to follow our curiosity, to hold adventure lightly as we make change, because we do ourselves such an injury when we think it's all on us and we have to do it alone. And it's a grim, horrible slog through replacing our beliefs or changing our life, right? It's joy. It's adventure. It's lightness. It's good. And when you reach for it that way, it's much easier, much better, much more healing than reaching from it from, oh no, I have all these terrible beliefs. Now I've got to change them. This is going to be awful, right? Reach for it with love and joy, just as you do in the book.
I have a metaphor that I use for myself and my mentors, and I use it. I picture myself as a swashbuckler pirateer, and I'm on the deck of my own ship, and I'm the captain of my own ship, and we're going out into the ocean. And there's a quote out there that says that if you intend to change, you need to be away from the shore for a long time, and you don't know when you'll see it again. So rather than have that statement frighten me, I decided I would be the captain of my own ship, and I'm a swashbuckler, and I've got this way cool blouse on with these big, voluminous arms. I mean, I have fun with that. And when I get frightened, I go and change my biochemistry by having changed, by having the thought process in my head of that fun. My biochemistry changes in that moment, and then I have the courage again to do what I need to do.
I love that. It's the puffy shirt. You're wearing the puffy shirt, the famous puffy shirt.
I am. I've got my pirate shirt on.
Let the listeners know what they can find at getlove.com. Let them know how they can connect with the book and connect with you.
Well, my first gift is that there is a free discussion with me on ending loneliness. And there's another free discussion on what true love is. Come and join me. Get them for free. The book is the ebook is priced at $3.99. Think about that.
That's awesome.
$3.99. It's my gift to the world. Come and learn. And it doesn't have to cost money. Go and get some free internet access at Starbucks and learn. And then when you're ready, join me at a webinar and you'll walk through it, or an intensive, or whatever is of your choosing. But I don't believe in strong-arming you into you have to do it my way, or you are without access to the information. No, I give you the information, And if you'd like to dance together, if you'd like to walk hand in hand on the path together, then let's do that.
Oh, Kimberly, thank you so much for being on the program today. What great fun to connect with you. Thank you.
It was my honor. Thank you, Karen.
You're so welcome. That was Kimberly Hart. Her new book is Get Love, How to Transform Your Love Life. And you can find out more about the book, about Kimberly, about the changes that she's making in the world at getlove.com. And of course, I always welcome your feedback, your comments, your questions, your suggestions for future shows. Always, you can find me through my website at karenhager.com. And thank you for listening today. Together, we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.